is considered to be selling pork, then the ruling is the same. You mm-hmm. are not you are not going to sell, and you it's not permissible to sell pork.
They are not only selling pork. I mean, yeah. like they are selling other stuff, other sandwiches.
Sure, but
including, for example, this particular sandwich, mm-hmm. which is somehow comprising like a piece of, for example, pork.
You are right. Of course, when it comes to selling, let's say, halal sandwich, mm-hmm. okay. Vegetable sandwiches made of vegetable or made of halal meat mm-hmm. or made of things which are essentially halal or mm-hmm. and pure, of course.
Yes.
There is no objection to you. But, you know, to run a franchise of pork, because in some, let's say, like, for example, you're working in McDonald's, you know?
Yes.
And it has a part of French.
They have a vast variety of sandwiches, all right,
yeah,
or
food
eatable
stuff.
Thing or edible things,
yes.
right? Just part of their job description is to sell also, for example, that particular sandwich, which is like having or bearing a little bit of non-halal meat.
Of course, it's not permissible, and you should because you are let's say. You are working for the company, and you can just tell them that you are not going to sell that, but you can sell other stuff,
uh-huh.
you know. Just like many people work in gas stations, you know.
Right.
People who work at gas stations are supposed to sell alcohol also,
mm-hmm.
you know, because there is no gas station in, let's say, in America or in Europe, without, let's say, a small...
convenience store.
Yeah, very good. Convenience store selling alcohol, you know. It's not permissible for a Muslim to sell alcohol, no matter what the situation or what the excuse, so on. But he can let someone else do it,
mm-hmm.
okay? If he has a non-Muslim co-worker
yes.
who's working with him, he should let that thing happen by him. And he cannot even receive the money for that, because if he receives it as a cashier,
mm-hmm.
he's considered to be selling it,
mm-hmm.
because a cashier is responsible for selling and receiving the money.
Yes.
So he cannot act even then as a cashier, and he should let someone else do it.
Mm-hmm. I see.
You know, but there's one thing I want to add to my point, and that is, if someone, you know, just sells these things, these items, with the intention of just getting rid of them and just giving up on these things, okay? Because these are things you have. You have the right to give your hand up. You give up on these things.
Mm-hmm.
And you just receive the money with this intention that you are giving up on these haram items, okay?
Right.
Then in that case, the money that you receive is actually halal.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I see.
The Office of Ayatollah Sistani is currently providing the following services. 1. Board of Istifta, replying to religious questions. 2. Helping the poor, needy, homeless, and those who have suffered losses by earthquakes and floods. 3. Sending books for people who want to understand and learn Islam. 4. Hajj delegation. 5. Sending preachers. Board of Istifta is a link between Ayatollah Sistani and people. It provides them with answers to questions pertaining to religious, ideological, social, and educational matters in accordance with the verdicts and rulings of Ayatollah Sistani. For more information, visit the website of Ayatollah Sistani at www.sistani.org. You can also ask your questions through the following email, english@sistani.org.
What about mahramiya? What does it mean, Sheikh Javi, to be a mahram or a non-mahram? Are there any specific rules? What are the necessary rules and laws about mahramiya?
Well, this is quite a different topic we are going to, because we are discussing miscellaneous issues, of
yes.
course, mahramiya is a long topic, and we can discuss it maybe in one of the following episodes. But even then, let me just say a few, just say that mahram and non-mahram is a very important issue, especially in modern time, and when people are having interactions in the and different settings, like for example in the cyberspace, men and women have their interaction in the external concrete world, and the concrete external world, of course, men and women have and they have interactions, and of course they have give and take relationships. So it is important to know who are our mahram and who are our who are mahram to us and who are non-mahram. Of course,
mm-hmm.
generally speaking, a mahram is one who cannot be married under any circumstances, no matter what the situation. Okay,
right.
It is absolutely forbidden to marry a mahram. Okay, and of course, one should look at who a person can marry and who a person cannot marry.
Mm-hmm.
If a person cannot be married under any circumstances, so that woman is actually a mahram. And if a person can be married at any situation or under any circumstances, and it can be imagined, at least it can be assumed that, of course, marriage is permissible and she is marriageable.
Right.
Then, of course, she is mahram to you, and of course, when she's non-mahram to you, and of course, you have to stay away from her. You have to, let's say, you should not look at her hair, at her body, and her private part. She should observe hijab. She should observe the Islamic dress code, and you cannot live together with
mm-hmm.
with her in the same room. And you cannot joke with her. You cannot express love and intimacy
mm-hmm.
with her. And these are some of the things you can.
Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh. Let me cut you in. In fact, we promise our dear audience to be following up this mahramiya rules. In fact, in the episodes to come. Thank you very much for listening to us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. وبجبروتك التي غلبت بها كل شيء وبعزتك التي لا يقوم لها شيء وبعظمتك التي ملأت كل شيء وبسلطانك الذي على Brothers and sisters, we were talking about this phrase of the dua, وَبِجَبَرُوتِكَ الَّتِي غَلَبْتَ بِهَا كُلَّ شَيْءٍ. And I ask you by your invincibility through which you overwhelm all things. We talk about the word Jabarut, which is a kind of hyperbole, and it means that Almighty Allah compensates for all the shortcomings and inadequacies of the creatures. He, subhanahu wa ta'ala, grants them everything they need in order to reach their full capacities. So their inadequacies are covered by Almighty Allah's invincibility. We talked about the compensation of sun's exhausted energy in the previous program, and today we will inshallah point to two more, and we will mention them hoping that they increase our faith in his position. Caspian Sea is about 27 meters beneath the sea level, and it continues to go further down. This Caspian Sea is not related to the free seas, so its tide is not in concurrence with the ocean's general ebb and flow. Since it has a very small size, this sea cannot use the gravity of the moon, so technically it shouldn't have had a tide. So what happens if the seas do not have a tide? The sea should have rot long ago, polluting its shores, losing any living things in it. But the question is, why did this not happen? The Omnipotent who created this sea very well knew how to compensate the shortcomings. He sent winds that their jobs is to create waves in the sea, to such an extent that the rivers pouring into it have tides too. These winds blow so powerfully that most fishermen cannot even control their boats against them. Another duty of these winds is that they drive the clouds from the north to the south of the sea and produce rain in the northern shores of Iran. And they produce gardens of flowers. The Almighty Allah also sends the seawater to the floods, at the same time that these winds send the clouds from the north of the sea to the south, the fresh seawater flows to the muddy river water and mixes with it. So this causes it to be made less dense and removing any seeds and roots by its salt. And when these winds stop, Almighty Allah sends other winds that interestingly reverse the water flow, and they have other different jobs that we are yet not aware of. This is one sign.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In the name of Allah, the beneficent, the merciful. Oh Allah, bless Muhammad and his progeny. Oh Allah, I beseech you, by your mercy which encompasses everything, and by your power by which you overcome everything, and which submits to it everything, and humble before it is everything. And by your might by which you conquer everything, and by your majesty against which nothing can stand, and by your greatness which prevails over everything, and by your authority which is exercised over everything, and by your own self that shall endure forever after everything has vanished, and
by your names which manifest your power over everything, and by your knowledge which pervades everything, and by the light of your face which illuminates everything. O he who is light, O he most holy, O he who is light, O he most holy.
Yet another sign of the compensation of the Almighty Allah in the universe is the compensation of fruit seeds shortage. The fruit seeds are useless until they are planted and subjected to Almighty Allah's invincibility that shapes them in various forms. A pleasant apple was once a tiny enclosed seed inside a grocery store box. It did not have any use as a seed except if it were to be planted. When the farmer places it under the soil, some agents like fresh air, light, water, even mineral elements help it to compensate its shortcomings, but they are all happening by the Almighty Allah's will. So the apple becomes a delicious, pleasant, and colorful fruit for all the human beings to be used. Taking a quick look, the ingredients of the apple, I assume, makes us more familiar with Almighty Allah's invincibility. The apples have different minerals, like phosphor, like calcium, iron, copper, zinc, etc. The apple also has got sugars in it, like glucose and fructose, fats and acids, color ingredients, vitamins of A, B, C, and G, and also more than 80% of water. And this is how the invincible compensates the shortcomings of a fruit. If we were to simply indicate his compensation to other entities as well as to spiritual elements, we would need infinite number of blank pages, as much as the number of all the entire human population, only to realize that we will not understand enough of his mercies. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. It is my absolute honor and pleasure to be with you guys today, and of course, with my wonderful friend and sister Razia Shamani. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. It's really an honor for me to be here.
We've been talking about self-care and reproductive system hygiene and health, right?
Exactly.
You know it's especially important when Allah decides to talk about it in the Quran, because the Quran is holistic sort of rule book. He doesn't necessarily talk about the details of everything, right? He leaves the rest to the ahadith and the seerah of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, and the ma'asumeen. But when he decides to talk about something, you know that, all right, this is some important stuff that he wants you to take notice of. And he says, like you mentioned, Sister Razi, in his holy book, that the reproductive system of a man and a woman is one of his signs. It's something that those who are thinkers want to reflect upon and seriously realize that, oh my God, God is so awesome.
And also in the ahadith of the noble prophet and his household, we read that, for example, there are so many detailed descriptions of when you want to approach your wife to have your intimate relationship, do this, do that, you know, the foreplay is explained in detail.
Exactly. It's,
so when the prophet talks about it, why should we be shameful
exactly.
to mention something?
When there's a space, a safe, secure, healthy space to talk about it, it needs to be talked about,
exactly.
right? Because at the end of the day, we're all grown adults, we're responsible, we're mature enough, and this is a part, a natural part of our lives.
And it plays a very significant role in the happiness of a couple.
Of a couple, exactly.
And really, if they want to have a good marriage, a good lasting marriage, they have to pay attention. A lot of practicing Muslim men and women, they believe that if they are good Muslims, they have to pray and go to this ziyarah and that ziyarah and go to this
charity.
Pay charity. And then when it comes to the intimate relationship, they're like, no, you know, we are Muslims. As a matter of fact, the noble prophet was such a gentleman with his wives.
He was so tender and so affectionate
and so
courteous.
Caring with regards to the details of his relationship with his
wives.
Because
he understood. I think in essence, he really understood how complex a human being is. And if you neglect one aspect and, like you say, caricaturize another aspect.
This is not religion.
Exactly. And it's not realistic or practical at all. So today we're going to be discussing some important stuff that I recommend our listeners pay special attention to. Whether you're planning to get married, you're already married, you're planning to have kids, you already have kids, you want to teach your kids this stuff. It's all good stuff. So
right. So we're going to talk about the journey of the sperm in a woman's body.
Awesome. Biology 101.
I was actually very stunned and very surprised to know some facts as I was going through some of the information that I was studying for. For instance, did you know that how long can a sperm live? Frozen sperm.
Uh-huh.
How long can it live outside the body of a man?
If it's frozen, a whole years.
Yeah, decades.
Exactly.
You can preserve a frozen sperm in case of any problems. This is God's power, subhanAllah.
50 years to be exact.
50 years.
Yeah.
This is a blessing. This is a ni'mah that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us, that this capacity, the potential for this little tiny particle to live for years and years outside the body of a person, which enables the human species to have, you know, more chances of fertility in case anything happens.
But funnily enough, a woman's egg can only be frozen in store for 10 years.
Wow. And a woman can only have reproduction for a certain amount of years.
Yeah.
But a man, you know,
it's more limitless than a woman.
Exactly.
It's longer than a woman.
So much until I think the end of his life.
As long as he lives, he can reproduce.
And you can.
Which is really interesting. I really want to understand the philosophy and hikmah of that. But that's for another discussion. We're going to be back after a short break, so stay tuned. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Muslim Lady here on IRIB English Radio. Right, so moving on, the reproductive system of a man and a woman is one of signs, something that those who are thinkers want to reflect upon and seriously realize that, oh my God, God is so awesome.
When a sperm reaches the reproductive system of a woman, it could take up to 30 minutes. I mean, the shortest it could get. It's been stated from 5 minutes to 30 minutes. It's possible. It's been seen that the sperm can reach the reproductive system.
Mm-hmm.
But a healthy sperm usually, it takes about 8 hours. From 6 to 8 hours to reach the place of fertilization.
Interesting. That's the morning after pills. Okay.
Right. Exactly. And that a healthy sperm can also live in the body of a woman from 2 to 5 days. It varies based on the chromosome of the sperm.
Interesting.
Right. So if it's a girl chromosome, it's different. XX, it's going to stay in the body so much longer.
So upping the chances of the egg being fertilized
as
female.
A girl,
right.
As a female, it's right. So much more. And if it's an XY chromosome, it can only stay for a shorter amount of time.
I think that's why we have more women in the world than
exactly.
men. Exactly. Right.
That's one
women,
of the reasons.
Potentially, women are, they have higher chances of being fertilized. And, you know, it's really interesting when you're explaining that.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the smallest particle, one of the smallest particles of our existence, strives and tries so hard for life.
Exactly.
Just battling, going against the current, finding its way to that egg that it needs to fertilize, and you know
how many sperm, with every ejaculation, there are 200 to 300 million sperms, then out of all these millions of sperm,
only one fertilizes the
egg. Gets to be the winner of the battle.
And I actually read somewhere that it's the egg that chooses which one, that it has a stronger gravitational pull toward the egg.
Someone was saying that it's just like the proposal that happens in the outside world, that so many men come to propose to a girl, to a woman, and she chooses whom to
accept.
This is the same in the body of a woman. She waits in her place, and all these proposals come, and then out of them, the healthiest, the quickest to move wins the battle.
The most perseverant, the strongest, like you said. Okay, and then what happens?
Okay.
So out of the 200 to 300 million sperms that enter a woman's reproductive system, one of it finds its way
to the egg
through the egg's pull, gravitational pull.
And it opens, and once that egg opens itself to the sperm and they fertilize, it produces a kind of shell around it that will prevent the entrance of
any other sperm.
So only one can find its way through, and all the others either die on the way or, you know. And inside the egg, there's the food. This egg is going to host the sperm for some time until they go through the voyage and they get settled in
the uterus
of a woman.
SubhanAllah.
This is amazing.
It's so amazing. Beautifully designed and crafted.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
لقد خلقنا الإنسان في أحسن تقويم.
We have have certainly created man in the best of stature.
What happens that sometimes there are cases of infertility is that there are like a lot of reasons, but two of the most important reasons is that there is not enough movement or motion in the sperms. Sometimes there's a problem in the shape of the sperm, like there's no tail or the deficiency in tail or the head of the sperm.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there are not enough number of sperms, like lower than 20 million is considered, a man is considered to
deficient.
Be like infertile. And so he needs help. And there are different ways of treating this infertility. In these cases where there's like a problem with the sperm, either the motion or the count, the number of the sperms, two methods are done. One of them is IUI, which is intrauterine insemination.
Right.
In this IUI,
they extract the sperm from
the
man.
They extract the sperm and then they inject it in the body of the woman.
Right. Artificially,
right?
Basically.
Right. And then this is like for people whose problem with, you know, whose infertility problem is not so severe,
mm-hmm.
and they need less help. But with people who have more serious, you know, conditions, like their sperm count is very low or the motion of the sperm is like not good enough, usually they use the treatment of IVF, which is in vitro fertilization. In this process, they extract the eggs from the body of the woman,
uh-huh.
and you know, by with an operation, so the woman has to become like unconscious,
sedated,
and then in a laboratory, they take the sperms and then they fertilize
in a tube,
right?
Interesting.
And then they return
it to the woman's body.
Exactly.
Right.
And then there are, you know, I think there's like 30% or less or more chances of like having real like successful fertilization.
Or sometimes they just put it in a surrogate mother if the woman's
exactly.
health is not optimal enough.
Right, exactly.
There are ahkam and fiqhi matters regarding this whole phenomenon, which is not what we're going to discuss on our show. If you guys have any questions regarding this matter, make sure to refer to your marja and your scholar to find out the jurisprudential rulings regarding this process.
So it's incredible that the world of fruits and vegetables, how they can help people with problems. You know, actually, it's a matter of lifestyle as well. That
Definitely.
You know, to have the right
diet.
Nutrition and diet in your everyday food.
Thank you so very much, Sister Razia, darling,
welcome.
And thank you to our listeners for being with us on today's episode of Muslim Lady. Until next time, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, Muhammad is the messenger, so Allah is our return.
The Quran Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
The United States continues to lob accusations of human rights abuses, cyber attacks, and other criminal activity at Russia, China, and several other players in the global south. The United States recently dismissed Syria's elections as undemocratic, doing the same to Bolivia in 2019 and Venezuela the year after. The United States allows itself to invade countries like Iraq in the name of democracy, to steal Iran's oil in the name of counterterrorism, and to antagonize even its own allies for daring to do business with Russia. Therefore, is it not reasonable to pause and ask whether the United States itself practices what it preaches? I definitely think it is. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. Since the aftermath of World War II, the United States has attempted to push a rules-based international order, proclaiming itself a champion of democracy and human rights. In the years since, this claim has been proven to be largely misguided at best, and some would say a false pretense in order to intimidate and control other nations. On numerous occasions, both under Trump and Biden, the United States committed what can only be described as acts of piracy against Iran. Venezuela has been under brutal U.S. sanctions for the last decades. Donald Trump ramped those sanctions up, causing Venezuela's economic situation to worsen exponentially and infrastructure to deteriorate rapidly. Although Venezuela sits on the world's largest oil reserves, it cannot refine this oil and has a significant fuel shortage. Venezuelan companies have also been cut off from the rest of the world due to targeted sanctions on its banking and oil sectors and cannot offload or sell any oil in exchange for fuel. One solution offered up by Iran was to trade Venezuelan gold for Iranian fuel. In the summer of 2020, Iran sent its first fuel tankers to Caracas, bringing much-needed fuel with them to the Bolivarian Republic. With many ships completing their journey successfully and unhindered, in August of 2020, the United States took control of some vessels and stole the oil. The Trump administration then proceeded to sell this oil, making millions in the process. To no one's surprise, this practice has continued under the Biden administration, which has chosen to keep virtually all of the dirty imperialist practices of the Trump administration going. On May 31st, 2021, the Biden administration went ahead and did exactly the same as Trump and sold off millions of barrels of Iranian oil that they had stolen at sea. Just like pirates, the unilateral sanctions imposed by the U.S. on Iran, Venezuela, Syria, and other countries continue to undermine international law and inflict enormous suffering on millions of civilians. Countries under brutal sanctions naturally try to find a way to circumvent what is essentially siege warfare, to mitigate the economic crisis and suffering brought upon them. And how does the United States respond? It engages in further violations, resorting to acts of piracy. Venezuela has been cut off from world markets. In order to barter, it has attempted to use its gold reserves. One of these reserves lies in the Bank of England in London. Since 2019, $1 billion worth of gold belonging to Venezuela has been stolen, confiscated by the Bank of England at the behest of the Americans and the U.S.-backed opposition led by Juan Guaido. A court case is now unfolding in Britain to decide the legitimacy of the Venezuelan government and to whom the gold rightfully belongs. Just imagine that. A British court is going to decide who the real government in Venezuela is, completely ignoring the fact that Maduro's government was democratically elected, is officially recognized by the Venezuelan people, by the United Nations, and the international community at large. This attempt to steal the gold is in order to block Venezuela from being able to circumvent the cruel sanctions that the West has wielded against Venezuela. More recently, in June 2021, Iran has sent additional ships to Latin America. The Biden administration subsequently issued a so-called warning to Venezuela and Cuba not to allow Iranian ships to dock. It has also accused Iran of sending weapons to Venezuela. And once again, we see here the colonial mindset where the United States speaks to other countries like they are children who need supervision and ignores their sovereignty and right to self-determination. If Iran and Venezuela want to trade with each other over international waters, this is business between Iran and Venezuela, all right? Secondly, Biden has no right to issue warnings to Iran nor Venezuela for docking ships on their land. These are not U.S. colonies. They are not U.S. territories. You see, this is precisely the level of absurdity that one hears from Western governments and equally from the mainstream media, who continue to think and speak quite brazenly in the same imperialist manner with this colonial mindset. And speaking of Iranian ships, we've also seen Iran sending several fuel tankers to Syria in recent months. Syria is experiencing its own fuel shortages because, unsurprisingly, the United States is stealing its oil in the northeastern regions of Hasakeh and Deir ez-Zor. Due to the fuel crisis in Syria and the crippling sanctions imposed by the United States and the European Union, Iran has attempted to mitigate the situation. However, several tankers have been hit in what appear to be acts of sabotage attributed to Israel in recent months. As we can see, the United States steals Syrian oil, steals Iranian oil, and then profits off of this theft. Whether at land or at sea, this can only be described for what it is, piracy. And through the help of the British, Venezuelan gold is also being stolen at the behest of the Americans. This is not only morally reprehensible, but very clearly a brazen disregard for international law and maritime rules. Lebanon has been suffering its own economic crisis for the last years. The inflation, coupled with the lack of foreign currency reserves and the fuel crisis, have resulted in a severe hit to living standards. Recently, in June of 2021, Hezbollah's leader, Sayed Nasrallah, gave a televised speech to commemorate the 30-year anniversary of Manar TV. During the speech, he spoke of the ills that the Lebanese people are suffering and facing, and he issued a striking proposition. He said that if the Lebanese government cannot contend with the economic crisis, that Hezbollah will go negotiate with Iran to import fuel directly. And just dare the Lebanese authorities try and stop this. This was met with praise by many who see the now defunct Lebanese government as unable to handle, but also responsible for the economic woes they face. And some rival MPs in Lebanon, of course, retorted with fears that this would bring on sanctions from the West. Now, funnily enough, very shortly thereafter, it was revealed that the U.S.-backed government in Iraq would be doubling its oil supply to Lebanon from 500,000 to 1 million tons a year. Some suggested that it was Nasrallah's speech that resulted in the Americans and Iraqis, by extension, being so scared that they prompted this action. Nevertheless, it is crucial to underscore how much of a hand the United States, how much of a hand the West has in destabilizing countries around the world, and in particular in the Middle East, as we've seen time and time again. Even when it comes to matters of negotiation, such as the talks to revive the Iran nuclear deal or Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, we see again that there is no respect for international agreements. Signed in 2015, the deal, the JCPOA, did not even last the length of one presidential term and was ripped up by Donald Trump in 2018. It seems, unfortunately, that the idea of principles, of respecting one's own word, these things do not carry any meaning. The Biden administration has promised to re-enter the agreement, but still beats around the bush when it comes to re-implementation and has only wasted time thus far. Now, one would think that the United States would be more lenient on its own allies, but this often is not the case. The United States is very effective at pressuring even its own allies into abdicating their own sovereignty. A perfect example of this is Germany. In 2003, when the United States kidnapped and tortured a German citizen, Khaled al-Masri, who was wrongfully accused of being a terrorist, Germany demanded that the CIA agents involved be extradited to face justice. Diplomatic cables, later published by WikiLeaks, revealed extensive evidence of how the United States successfully pressured the German government not to pursue the case against the 13 CIA agents responsible for this kidnapping and torture of al-Masri. Germany succumbed to U.S. pressure and threw one of its own citizens under the bus, allowing the United States to get away with such heinous acts. In 2013, owing to the revelations by former NSA contractor Edward Snowden, it became known that the United States was spying on the phone of German Chancellor Angela Merkel. This caused a scandal, but ultimately resulted in nothing more than a scandal and a media frenzy, and essentially a slap on the wrist. Just recently, in May 2021, it was revealed that Denmark also was implicated in this affair, aiding the United States in bugging the German chancellor's phone. In late 2020, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo went on a tour of Europe, and he specifically left Germany out of this tour. And instead, he visited only its neighboring countries, signaling the United States' discontent with Germany's work on Russia's Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Pompeo went to countries like Austria and Poland, giving speeches about how evil Iran and China are, and he openly discouraged those European governments from importing Chinese products, like from Huawei, and warned them not to cooperate with Russia on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Pompeo accused the Chinese Communist Party of controlling the tech giant Huawei and putting spyware on its devices, which, given the revelations about NSA surveillance and spying, and the cooperation of Silicon Valley companies like Microsoft, Google, and Yahoo with the United States national security apparatus, is so hypocritical that it becomes hilarious. The United States does not want anyone to participate in the construction or use of Russia's Nord Stream 2 pipeline because the Americans do not want Russia to cement a dominant market share in European gas. Instead, they want this for their ally, Ukraine, or maybe even Qatar and other countries close to them to get the upper hand. The gist of it is pretty clear. When it comes to business, the United States doesn't care about what is good for its so-called allies, nor does it care about their sovereignty. The United States wants its big tech companies in Silicon Valley to maintain their monopoly over the tech industry, and it wants its allies and oil and gas partners to maintain theirs over their respective industries. Anyone who stands in the way will be cut off or given the cold shoulder. Another remarkable event that unfolded was when Donald Trump claimed that Germany wasn't paying its bills to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, which subsequently caused a diplomatic row. NATO was created in 1949 as a military alliance between the United States and other Western European countries to counter the Soviet Union. Another way of looking at it, especially post-Cold War, it's a protection racket. This is very similar to how the mafia operates. When the mafia says, pay us money or we will beat you up, people pay the mafia to be protected from the mafia itself. A similar parallel can be drawn between such protection rackets and NATO. In June 2020, Trump called Germany delinquent with its payments, and the disgruntled president of the United States promptly withdrew thousands of U.S. troops stationed there. And even then, Germany still remains home to the largest amount of U.S. troops in all of Europe. We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities.
Now joining me to discuss more is Alex Rubenstein, investigative journalist and reporter at Substack. Thanks for taking the time, Alex. It's wonderful to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Alex, you know, oftentimes we see the United States talk about human rights abuses in other countries. You know, they point the finger at China and they slander them with allegations of human rights abuses. They do the same to Russia, to Iran, to China. And they're also pushing this lab leak theory now with China. And, you know, it's not just the U.S. government doing this. It's the entire mainstream media apparatus that's equally geared towards repeating these claims. Now, inversely, why don't you think there's much criticism of the United States' human rights record and undemocratic practices in the mainstream media?
Well, we have to understand the media as an extension of the U.S. empire. And, you know, a lot of what fuels media reports on this kind of thing is like the NGO industrial complex and the think tanks. These organizations that are highly funded by, you know, defense contractors or billionaires, billionaire foundations, because they have the resources to actually devote, you know, investigative power into you know, these kinds of allegations, whether they're true or not. They're the ones that are able to, you know, furnish the statistics for the media to report on. So, you know, the NGO industrial complex, the think tanks, and the media are all just really an extension of the U.S. empire. That's why it's important to have outlets like Press TV and others that push back on this kind of thing. So I mean, there's just not money for that kind of information that would really expose the U.S. crimes abroad, which are committed, you know, just about everywhere. If you look at the world map, you know, you're going to see just about every country is being meddled in one way or another. Even allies, you know, because God forbid that they have a leftist or social democratic person ascend to power there. You know, that would be very bad because the United States needs its clients compliant.
Yeah, right. And, you know, when you speak about allies, much like the Trump administration, the Biden administration is very much against the Nord Stream 2 pipeline that's being built by Russia and Germany. What do you think the goal of the United States is when it recently decides to sanction Russia, but not Germany?
Well, I think that the United States might be on thin ice with Germany, especially considering what the Obama administration did spying on Chancellor Angela Merkel's phones. So, obviously, they want Germany to remain powerful as a bulwark against any kind of, spread of an economic ideology that is different from neoliberalism, you know, which is something that they've been fighting in that area since, you know, World War II, and they continue to do in, like, Belarus, for example. You know, big part of this, the reason that the United States is taking such aggressive measures against Belarus and issuing sanctions and such is because they have a different economic model, is because they're allied with Russia, excuse me. So it's part of that.
So what else is in the toolbox for the United States to kind of whip its allies into shape when they misbehave? You know, what does the U.S. resort to in contrast to Iran and Syria and how it treats them with complete animosity?
Right. Well, I mean, I think globally, whether they're allies or not, the thing is that the military option is not in the toolbox, right? The world is becoming increasingly multipolar, and the United States can't compete militarily. So what they do use is all these economic incentives. We have to understand that the IMF, the World Bank, these are also extensions of the U.S. empire. They're controlled by the U.S. They're based in Washington. The U.S. has veto power over any major policy in those organizations. So economics is really the leverage and information. So it's people say, oh, Trump didn't start a new war, but he's been continuing and expanding and he created hybrid war, which is really the modus operandi of the U.S. government at this point, like I said, because the military option is off the table, because also the United States can't afford to go to war, really. So they're resorting to these dirty tricks, these economic measures. Sabotage is a big part of the playbook. Whether that be, you know, setting an Iranian ship on fire or recently we saw piracy enter the game with the seizure of $110 million worth of Iranian crude oil. We see the same thing in Syria where the United States is occupying illegally Syrian oil fields and what the Bank of England did to Venezuela, seizing its gold. This is all part of the agenda here.
Why do you think it is that the United States and, of course, Britain and the West have an issue grasping the concept of sovereignty when it comes to Iran, when it comes to Syria, and, of course, the global South in general?
Well, because they don't do everything the United States tells them to, because they exercise their sovereignty. I mean, a country like Germany might have some veneer of sovereignty, but they do whatever the U.S. tells them to do, pretty much. I mean, there are exceptions, Nord Stream 2, but, you know, it's their exercise of their sovereignty. We want to do a regime change in Venezuela. We want to do a regime change in Iran. We want to do one in China. So, of course, the fact that they're trading is frightening to the United States government, because even though it's well within their rights to trade, to pick their trading partners and pick who they want to sell to, who they want to buy from, and who they want to, in the case of China, who they want to invest in.
What do you make of all these people in the media, all these politicians who claim that Biden is a return to normalcy, right? That he's going to go meet Putin very soon, right? And he's going to teach Putin a lesson, and you know, he's going to tell him about human rights issues and cyber attacks. Do you think Joe Biden, do you think the United States is in a position to be lecturing others on human rights issues?
Well, it's totally hypocritical. I mean, like, you know, it's Joe Biden did a regime change in Ukraine, and he did it in the name of fighting corruption. Months later, after the coup, his son got, you know, $50,000 a month to do basically nothing for a strategically important, nationally strategically important oil and gas company. So, you know, you want to talk about corruption, there you go. The return to normalcy is a return of what we're seeing now, piracy, of breaking international law. You know, it's like they're going to talk to Putin about human rights while forbidding Israel to be tried in the International Criminal Court. It's absurd. And I think that the world is realizing just how absurd it is. And we're starting to see, you know, with Biden, who is like kind of, you know, letting all the alumni from the Obama administration kind of take the charge. I think with that kind of weak figurehead, the world is kind of, is realizing that the United States is not going to be able to lead. And it's going to be up to countries like China, who have a competent leader and a more actually humanitarian approach to foreign policy, to show us the way going forward.
Alex, just as a last question to wrap up, you know, there was a reporter in the briefing room who was asking about the scars that the European leaders sustained and how they were traumatized by the Trump presidency. What do you think of that statement that Trump was just an anomaly?
Yeah, I mean, of course he was a bit of an anomaly because you know, it's not so common for U.S. presidents to actually say truthful things. And he did, everyone, you know, he's kind of like Kissinger, where he was like, you know, this is actually how it is. You know, like the intelligence community cannot be trusted. And that's not like to say that Trump is like, was a good president. He wasn't, but he did show the face of the empire very explicitly and, you know, making a fool out of himself really reflected how the United States acts on the international stage. So I will give him credit for that. But in terms of actual policy, like, we see that all his worst policies, all of Trump's worst policies, are being continued by the Biden administration, and in some cases made worse.
Apparently, in the West, it's acceptable for the United States and Britain to behave like pirates who not only use violent means, sending their armed forces to bomb, kill, and occupy other countries, but of course to impose sanctions, to starve people to death and then steal Venezuelan gold, steal oil from Iran, from Syria, and behave like bandits. This is state piracy. This is organized crime at the state level. These imperialist nations are nothing more than international gangsters and criminals. They call themselves democratic, and they talk of freedom and rules-based international order, but there is nothing democratic, nor free, nor orderly about any of their actions. For all their talk of protecting human rights, there is no respect for human rights, nor for international law, treaties, and agreements. Through their war on terror, the Americans and their allies have violated the Geneva and Hague Conventions innumerable times. The Rome Statute has not even been fully ratified by the UK and was never adopted by the US. When it comes to the nuclear talks, the United States tore up the JCPOA, then accuses Iran of not following the deal. It's the world upside down. The Biden administration continues to beat around the bush, stalling and making excuses, wasting time, refusing to rejoin the deal, and then gives lectures about international law as it continues to impose crippling sanctions. When sovereign nations like Syria, Lebanon, Iran, Cuba, and Venezuela attempt to engage in mutual trade and partnership and cooperation, the West speaks about them as if they are children. Again, it appears that Joe Biden, much like his predecessors, has a very tough time grasping the concept of sovereignty. Iran, Venezuela, Syria, and all other countries do not need permission from the United States to trade with each other. They are not your colonies.